Welcome to the Animus podcast. Today we're going to be talking with Teresa Wilson. She's going to be sharing with us her journey from working in prisons all the way up to writing her book about creatives. During this conversation, we're going to have a really insightful look to the way that Teresa works, with a sense of being authentic and the sense of being us, ourselves, the you that you want to be. Hey Teresa, it's great to have you with us today. How are you doing?
I'm good, good. Thank you so much for having me.
So, it's been a while since we last spoke, so it'd be great if you could just sort of let me know, what is it that you're up to these days?
So I'm at a really exciting point where I have been coaching in prisons for the last 4 or 5 years and loved every day of doing that work. But as a coach, you know, I recognise that you can't get too comfortable. And I was getting a bit comfortable whilst coaching people, asking them to get out of their comfort zones. And so was thinking for a while about, well, what next and what does that look like? And throwing lots of things up in the air. And then just around, I don't know, the beginning of the summer, everything just sort of landed at the same time, which was really exciting. So that's a long way into saying what I'm doing right now, which is launching a few different things.
Okay.
So I finally got around to setting up my private coaching website, which has been 5 years in the coming, so that's live. I'm setting up a business with a colleague to deliver team and group coaching in businesses, which is a real departure for me and one that scares the bejeebus out of me, but that's, you know, I want that level of fear, really. That's where the growth is for me. I'm just starting work as an associate coach for Sanctus Mental Health Organisation, and I'm really, really excited about that because that gives me community. And I'm just finishing writing a book with a friend of mine, which is all about creativity and coaching, and looking at how the very many different ways that creatives can get in their own way when it comes to their own creativity.
Oh, wow.
So kind of having a lot of coaching conversations with creatives, and so working on a book which will then go into businesses and help people unleash the creativity in the people in their organisations.
So you're busy.
So I've got a lot on, yeah, but I'm so excited.
So before we talk about some of that current stuff, I just want to go back a step and explore the work that you were doing in prison. So that was with, is it Coaching Inside Now?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about that work.
That work, it was just such a blessing for me personally, because I come from a community development background, and so I always knew that I wanted to coach people who couldn't afford to pay me, and so I googled coaching in prisons and found the organisation and started volunteering for them initially. And I don't know if it was what I expected. I don't know what I expected. I don't think you can really know what coaching in prison is going to be like. And I remember the heart-stopping moment when they were kind of, oh yeah, we'll just go and get your keys. And I remember thinking, I get keys for a prison, you know, it was insane. But they do, when you walk around with keys. And that for me is probably the biggest differentiator. Once I get in the room with somebody, I'm coaching, you know, and it takes an awful lot for somebody to get to that point, to get through the door and sit down in front of me. But they're my client.
Yeah.
Everything else just melts away. They're my client. I'm there for them. We're there as equals. We're coaching completely as I would coach anyone anywhere. And that's a really unique experience for people in prison, where the hierarchies and the, you know, where you're told what to do all the time. So it's very unique for them. But for me, it's exactly the same. Apart from the moment at the end of the session when I get up and I let them out the door. Wow. And that's always a really sticky moment, you know, because we can have had such an intense connection, amazing work gets done. And then I can't quite ever get over that moment that I let them out, you know. It pops the bubble a little bit for me.
So are they able to leave before the end of the session, or is there like a timing thing that they have to stay in there for that period of time?
In theory versus practice, so it's different in different prisons. Different prisons have got different regimes. A lot of the prisons that I work in, there is the intention is that somebody always knows where the person is.
Right.
The reality is there's not enough staff to make that happen. So so they can leave early. I'm not going to police them. You know, I'm not the parent. I'm not the officer. I'm not going to take that role. If they want to go early, they can go early.
It's just really interesting that you're working, you know, as you say, you're working as equals in that space, but still there is a power that you have over them being in that space.
It's one of the oddities, I suppose, of the environment. The environment throws up an awful lot of challenges. There's a lot of kind of DNAs or couldn't attends, lots of appointment clashes. The mania exists out there, but oftentimes by the time they get there and they are able to sit down, as I say, most of the time, it vanishes, and they feel that. And that is such a unique and special. It really makes me treasure what it is that we do as coaches, in some ways much more than with my private clients, because there's, you know, some relationships that I've had where I've thought, wow, you know, this has been an exchange and a quality of exchange that this person has never had or never experienced. Even, you know, and they may have worked with many other agencies and many other professionals, but there is something unique about coaching. Makes me feel, you know, really grateful to be able to be that person.
So I was just thinking for a moment there about, you know, how would I feel going into a space like that? And I was just wondering about, you know, would there be fear or anxiety for me to work in those environments? So I was just wondering, what was that like?
As a coach?
Yeah.
I think the first time, you had the gates clanging. I mean, what do people know of prisons? Prisoners sell blockage and porridge. You know, we've got these televisual ideas of what it's going to be like. And the first prison that I worked in, it was like a National Trust property. You know, you go through the gates and it's all a bit like, there's this trepidation because it's so unknown. But kind of went through this big gate and it was like National Trust. Old Victorian buildings, beautifully maintained gardens, and that kind of threw me. And then I ended up going onto the wing, and the wing was like, oh yeah, no, I get it now. You know, the wing is a bit more like the telly, the prison that you see on telly. But the overriding thing, the thing that I think you very quickly realise, is that everybody is in prison. You know, it's just a microcosm of society, so everybody is in there. So you've got, you know, old people, young people, you've got grandmas. I've coached doctors and solicitors, and so everybody is in there, and you kind of feel that relatively quickly. So I think trepidation, but it melts away because at the end of the day, it's just people.
Were there any challenging experiences that you had?
I was working in a male in a men's prison, and there was, you know, I'm so client focused and so client led, and there was a problem with the room, and so went to a different space, and about 10 minutes, and he was a new client, hadn't worked with him, hadn't had a very relationship with him, and 10 minutes into the 90-minute session, I could hear everybody else in the building leave and lock the doors. And I do remember thinking, okay, shit, I'm alone in a room, nobody knows I'm here, and I don't know who this guy is. He's a lifer, you know, this is all I know. And so that was a moment that, you know, I made sure that was a one-off, not to be repeated, and you know, kind of, oh yeah, those lone working, you know, guidance.
Should
we read that document and make sure that I never end up in a situation like that again? And of course it was fine, it was absolutely fine, but
I can imagine my heart sort of pounding a little bit at that moment. Like, nobody knows I'm here, I don't know who you are, and everybody's leaving.
I
suppose in a sense you could have that experience outside of prison, working with a client where you suddenly go, this doesn't feel safe, or I'm unsure. So it's not to say that just because you're in prison it's going to be bad, you can have challenging situations outside that space as well.
Yeah, and that cross-fertilisation of learning, you know, there's stuff that I've learned in prison that I take out into my private practice and vice versa.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's all just opportunities for growth, really.
So and you sort of chose to leave that work, so to sort of expand your boundaries of how you're working and kind of creating more growth for yourself.
It was time to get frightened. Yeah, you know, I love the work, and I could do it forever. But as a coach, I just think it's so important to live the values, to live what it is that we work with clients on. You know, so I get coached all the time myself. But the space within which, you know, I'm being coached was, you know, it was all just a bit comfortable.
Okay.
So I'm ready for a bigger leap. And it took a while to work out what that was. And then this, I had, it was a one-day event organised by the ICF in London, and it was an introduction to team coaching. And I just fell in love with it. The trainer was incredible. I loved the way that she spoke about coaching. She talked in ways similar to Nick about the need of authenticity as a coach. It's your, you know, it's the bedrock.
Yeah.
Everything comes from really just working on developing, deepening that relationship with your authentic self and bringing that to the space. So I was really taken with it. So I did the training course earlier this year, and it's relational team coaching. So it's working with all the stuff that goes on in between, all that's unspoken, that's simmering, and all the ways in which we're impacting on other people without even realising it. So helping to kind of surface some of that so that people can be their as authentic as possible selves in that team, so that they can really go on and work.
I love that sort of group and team coaching work. There's something really interesting about exploring how is a team holding itself back through how we are operating together. And what's the unsaid that's in the space that we all feel but it isn't being voiced. And, you know, that works incredibly fascinating. And I remember doing the stuff with, his name's just falling out of my mind now, but we did the systemic coaching and leadership, Simon Weston.
Right.
So I did some work with Simon Weston around leadership coaching, and he talked about, you know, that the patterns that exist within groups and leaders and how we're all showing up. It's just like, oh, it sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's juicy.
Yeah.
It's really juicy. And what I loved about the course was that it was barely taught here, and it was mostly taught here in the space between us all. You know, it was really experiential. It was really... and so funny how you can be in your head, you know, running your own version of the story of how it is and how it should be. And then those trapdoor moments when you kind of fall through and, it, you know, just go, shit, you know, I completely read it. Or I just, I didn't allow other people their realities as well. And, you know, just fascinating.
And I remember when I was working with Simon, and he was just so adult. And it was something that really resonated with me, because I often think of, you know, great trainers are very adult in the space, but we get triggered and we get trapped and we get enmeshed in other relationships that can happen. But he was just like, I'm the adult in the space, and I will remain, and I will not rescue you. I will name what's happening, but I won't rescue it. I was like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So you're doing the group work.
Yes.
You're also doing was it with the mental health charity?
So Sanctus, yes, I've just become an associate coach with them, which I'm really excited about.
Who else is working with Sanctus?
Brad.
It's Brad! I thought that rang a bell, okay.
And Victoria. I think Victoria was one of the early coaches. And then I heard Brad talking about Sanctus at the...
At the summit,
And then the opportunity came up, so I'm really thrilled. Because as a coach, obviously, you know, I've been really lucky with Coaching Inside and Out, that I've had a community of coaches to work with and learn from and grow with, and it's so important to me. I don't think we can ever stop learning, you know, with and through other people's experiences. And so leaving Chow, I was kind of mindful of, I was, you know, stepping away from that community. And so Sanctus, it's a really wonderful, supportive community that is also really interested in growth and development. And really excited about getting started with them.
So you made me chuckle when you said, you know, it's your website's been 5 years in the making.
Yeah.
Because often I meet coaches and they're so eager to get this kind of website up and running. And was it a conscious choice to take your time with it, or was it just happened?
It's so funny, particularly after I finished my training with Animas, it was a bit like, oh, next step, you know, do the website. And I'd take myself so far. And I realised it was like, I should do the website, you know. And then I'd get so far and then I'd go, well, do I want to do it? No, I don't really want to do it. Right, well, then I won't. And I kind of went through this little dance a few times over the months. And I kept thinking, do I want a private practice? And I didn't know.
Mm.
So every time I caught myself thinking, you know, well, like, I should, there was nothing to say. Nothing came because it wasn't connected.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think sometime over the summer, there's something switched in my head and I just suddenly thought, how would I express to somebody what it's like to be coached by me? What's the truest picture that I can give? Because I reckon, as I'm growing in confidence about my approach, what I like, how it isn't, you know, coaching such a broad world anyway, isn't it? And so again, having, as you develop your authenticity, as you develop confidence and self-belief in your own approach and to put a marker in the sand and say, well, this is how I do it, this is what it's like for me. So when I started to think of it in those terms, it just came and it was done in a day, because that's easy to talk about and that's easy to say, because then I get really, really passionate about that. I'm not talking about a niche, I'm not talking about, but I'm talking about, you know, from the fire in my belly, why I do it, why I love it, and a bit like, what's it like to be coached by me? So, yeah, it came really easily. But, you know, these things wait, don't they? They wait and they form. Well, for me, anyway, that's how it is.
So that's been really interesting for new coaches, just to think about, you know, waiting until they can answer those questions.
Yeah.
As opposed to creating something and allowing something to be created. That's really interesting. Mm. And so what is that experience of being coached by you? What's that like? How might you describe that?
So I had a prospective client and I emailed him the other day and said, you know, I don't have a catchphrase for my coaching, but if I did, it would probably, you know, be something along the lines of, how do I be me? You know, so my coaching is for people who are really curious about the question, how do I be me? And in that whole kind of Charlotte Sills contracting matrix, you know, I love to work under the line. I love to work in that kind of emergent and explorative space. I don't really know what I want to change or what I want to work on. Or, you know, I just want to... I just want the experience of being me to be a bit easier or to be a bit richer. Or so I love getting in there.
Mm.
And I'm a terrible coach when it comes to behavioural stuff. I'm terrible. And I, you know, it's sort of like, oh, I can do it, but it doesn't excite me. And if people want, you know, a few simple steps on how to, you know, change their behaviour, I'll drag them down. I can't help myself. You know, it's like, no, you know, let's get in there. I can't help myself. So it's really good to know.
I think it's something great about going, this is how I want to work, this is how I want to do it, and if you work with me, this is how the experience is going to be. Because then I don't know where I read this, but it might have been something Rich Lipman spoke about, that when you are really clear on how you work and what you do, your clients can be really clear and they kind of don't mind what your philosophy is, but they need to feel that you have one.
Yeah,
I think that's really, really important. So you're not just kind of seeing what comes along, but you have a way that you want to express yourself as a coach.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing, is what I found is I can't help but express it in this way. But it took that time to get to that place of honesty where I wasn't trying to be a kind of coach who, you know, and the coach who can do everything. Well, I can't do everything, and I don't want to do everything. And actually, but this bit. Because that's what I realised, you know, in prison, I work with whoever comes through the door. And I was thinking, why is it there are some people who, the connection, we just fly.
Mm.
And we work and stuff gets done. And it's such an incredible experience as a coach when you've got that kind of connection, you know, and it's so satisfying and so rewarding. So I was thinking, yeah, what's the difference? And it was that willingness. It was something in them got it, you know, and all unspoken, but we just sort of got it. I think the more then that you can think, right, what are the experiences I want to have? What is it? What is that? So then if I can communicate that, then I'm more likely to get more of that happy days.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've also written the book. So
writing, goddamn, writing. Still.
Tell me about that process then.
Do you know, it's like being in some weird indie film, because I'm writing a book about how people get in their way when they start a creative process, and so I'm procrastinating, I'm talking myself out of it, I'm doing all the things, and I'm supposed to be the one who's giving them the answers, but I can't bloody write it because I can't bloody do it. And so it's been this real intense but sort of that, but then really rich, because then it's sort of okay, well, I am here. So then when I stop freaking out and I you know, and I can get into kind of coach mode and get a bit of space and think about, because I interviewed a lot of different creative people and kind of reflect on their experiences as well. Well, what is useful here? And so, yeah, it's been a really, well, it still is. We're almost, I think we're on the final draft. But it will be birthed when it's ready to be birthed. And again, it's another thing that we'll know when it's right. It's been fascinating process.
So I know you've got all this stuff going on, but I get this sense that there's something brewing in the system somewhere.
It's all of that now is go. Long gestation period, you know, longer for some than others, but it, you know, and I've been getting quite frustrated because it's like, oh, I really want to get going, but you can't until, you know, you need to do that, and then you need to do that, and sorting out the websites and the URLs and business cards, and then I went on holiday, and I've just got back from holiday, so now it's just go, really, with all of it. I'm working out what go means as well, you know. I'm really interested in this is my life, you know, so I have to I'm choosing to make it work for me, so I'm really interested. So a bit like the madness of writing the book about writing a book. It's, you know, I don't want to be running businesses in a way that I should or I ought. So whilst I'm doing it, I'm also really curious about, well, how am I going to do it? That, and I'm recognising that's how I work best. If I set too many plans or pin things down too much or have goals or targets, I go wonky, you know, I go wrong. And without being too much of a hippie, you know, it's sort of, I like to follow the energy and follow my nose. So I'm kind of curious about, well, how am I going to make it work? I know I'm chomping at the bit. I just want to get out there and start having conversations and talking to people. And I just want to get on, I want to get busy. I'm not quite sure, you know, I'm going to throw myself at it and then just evaluate as I go along, because I'm in no hurry. I'm going to be doing this for the next 20 years, you know. So that constant do reflect. We're coaches, we can't do it any other way.
Yes, and I think it feels like you've allowed yourself the time to get to that stage where, and also accept that you're going to try it, you're going to reflect on it, you're going to tweak it, you're going to try something else, reflect on it and tweak it, as opposed to work against your natural way of working.
Yeah. And at a small kind of daily level, I had some coaching and worked out, yeah, I'm a bit of a bumblebee. You know, I work best when I do a little bit over here, and then I get a little bit distracted and do something over there. And I get most done when I'm flitting about all over the place. So I know that works well. And it might be putting the laundry out or making a brew or then doing a blog post. So I have a feeling... as that scales up, it's going to be quite similar, quite loose, quite contained, but with a hell of a lot of faith and trust. You know, I'm really growing into trusting myself as a bit of a personal mantra. You know, I trust myself. I think it took me 46 years to realise that, I do trust myself. And that's a really rich vein that I can mine as I go about my business.
What do you think was the sort of the turning point that enabled you to go, yeah, I can trust myself?
I think it was something that came out of the team coaching training. You know, I got very stirred and stimulated, as I always do in groups. I don't like groups. You know, I'm an introvert. I'm very sensitive. I get overstimulated, and I get very noisy in here and very quiet here. And so unearthing some of that and really reflecting on what was happening throughout that team coaching training that I did, there was really, you know, there was some elation at one point, and then there was a real crash. Mm. But then when I kind of came out, the learning that I got was I've been frightened of the world all my life. But I realised that actually I can be the sense of safety and security for myself in the world. And that's just like, the golden egg,
yeah.
Working that out.
Yeah,
I am my own source of safety.
And it's not something that's external to yourself.
No.
So you don't have to find it.
No.
It exists within you.
And then you just feel like, yay. And that's, it's not invincible in a fake it till you make it type way. It's just like, yeah, there's a fire burning now. That isn't going to go out because, yeah, I'm the source of that. So
you're saying about, working in groups and how you felt about working in groups. And I just wondered, what was your animus experience?
A
lot of that was groups.
I almost didn't come back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, day one. It was that challenging. Day one, I remember I took myself off to the park at lunchtime and was, because it was a big group on that first day. I remember having my lunch in a park away from everybody, and I really didn't know if I could do it. And then by the end of day two, made a couple of really good connections, and that it was always going to happen. I was never going to not, but it was really quite suffocating,
yeah.
Because it just so goddamn noisy. For me.
Hmm. I was talking the other day, I was doing some training in Berlin, and one of the coaches in training said, I kind of feel everybody's energy.
Mm.
And I was like, going, well, you need to find ways of dealing with that, not in a negative dealing with it, but in just how to look after yourself when you feel everybody's emotion in the space. Mm. Because sometimes that's going to be a lot of emotion, a lot of anxiety, and how do you deal with it? I was saying, whether you go for runs, you meditate, put yourself in an energy bubble, whatever that might be for you. And so is there anything that you do that helps you when you're in those group environments, those group situations?
I think my newest learning, I suppose, is I think one of the reasons it's difficult is because the story that I'm running in my head contains all the rules for how it should be. And if only that one would be quiet, and if only that one would do... And you know, the facilitator's clearly asked us all to, X and I... And so recognising that, the source of the anxiety or trouble or disturbance isn't out there. It's here. Has been really helpful for me, because then it flips something from something painful that I can't do anything about to something interesting that I can be really curious about, and then make some decisions about, well, how, yeah, what do I want to do here?
It's really interesting. That reminds me of something that Caitlin Walker talks about in her book From Contempt to Curiosity, where she talks about how can we get curious about those things that we don't like, or the things that we notice that are difficult or challenge. So instead of putting somebody down or pushing something away, how can we kind of go, oh, I'm curious about that person being late or interfering, and exploring it through that way. It sounds a little bit like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. What's coming up for me, and what can I own?
Mm.
I'm doing a lot of that, kind of even at home, a little bit of that Byron Katie stuff, maybe flipping it, somebody saying, well, that person's really annoying me. Saying, well, no, I'm annoying myself. I'm annoying myself. You know, I'm agitating myself. So then coming back up, you know, what's the story that I'm running? What is it that I'm saying to myself?
Yeah.
And you can, I can stay annoyed. I can choose to kind of, you know, I'm going to be indignant and, you know, I'm going to... But it changes the energy of it, doesn't it? Rather than being a slave to it.
I suppose it's all of that work that we're doing in that paradigms module, that idea of, you know, what's the story that you're playing, you're choosing to be part of, and that we can make a choice about that story. We can rewrite that story or re-own that story, or we can allow it to own us, and there is a choice.
Yeah. And it's often funnier, you know, and there should be. but you know, the world's a better place and it's lighter as well. And I can get caught into martyr. That's one that I kind of I know. And martyrs, there's no joy in martyr. You know, there's no laughter. It's a goddamn, you know, really soul miserable place. But as soon as I clock it, usually, you know, it just makes me laugh because it is such a performance. You know, when you're sighing and huffing and puffing and, you know, doing all of the martyry stuff. So yeah, that flip can be really helpful. I think it just introduces, you know, being able to laugh at yourself and just introduce some levity.
Yeah.
And all of this, you know, I don't think you know, you're living it, aren't you? You never stop coaching, you know, your work, because you're working on yourself all the time. Everything is material. We're the biggest source of material, we're the biggest source of learning, I think. And, you know, anything that I work on with a client in a session, chances are sometime later that week, you know, it's going to come up for me, and you just that having the end of being humble enough to kind of go, yeah.
I remember when I first started coaching, I was like, it feels like there is some kind of universal cosmic joke at play, because all of my clients have my issues. I was like, what's going on here? It's just that, you know, we are all human, and we all have this stuff, and it's just kind of in the space.
Yeah. No, I love it. It's... And that's it, everything's joined up, everything's... And I know that, you know, my story will keep changing, and so I'm really curious about, you know, what next, whilst being really fascinated by what now as well.
And just, I was just thinking, as you said that, and you were saying your story changing, I was wondering, has your sort of, your client base, your private client base, has that shifted and changed as you've grown and developed?
Not really. It's always been quite organic in that I've never looked for clients, really. So it's always just been recommendations or... So I've worked with anyone that has kind of come on my radar, really. And there's been some breadth there, which has been really helpful. And there's been some people that I've ended up working with that have helped me to recognise, well, that wasn't a good match. Mm. And again, helping me refine that thinking around... well, what is a good match for me, and then how do I communicate that message more? So I'm glad, again, that it was just a sort of, I didn't control or contain too early, because I had some really, really useful experiences along the way with people. Whereas now, as I refine my message a bit more, but again, it's so broad that... I imagine I still work with kind of a real breadth of people and a real range of issues, but sort of anchored in that wanting to have an experience of change at a deeper level.
Because sometimes it isn't the niche that defines us, it's the way that we work that defines us. Yeah.
And I like working in quite an open-ended way, and I'm experimenting at the moment with... the last client consultation that I did, I just said, look, these are my fees, these are some of the ways that I work, sometimes monthly, sometimes fortnightly, sometimes an hour, sometimes 90 minutes. Go away and have a think about what your budget is and come back with a proposal. And my sense is that somebody's come back and we're going to work monthly, but I think it will be relatively open-ended. And again, that appeals to me, because if you're going to do deep change work, you can make change in six sessions, of course you can. I've seen it, you know, numerous times. But I'm kind of... And I quite like saying to the client owns it. You'll know when you need a pause. You'll know when you need to stop. This isn't work that gets done. It's life work. It's life journey stuff. Yeah. You know, we'll do a bit together and you'll have a sense of, I'm ready to take a pause or stop or... So I'm kind of experimenting with that at the moment.
I like that. So many coaches get caught up in the, I'm going to do eight sessions and that, you know, then we'll renegotiate. And I've always been a, well, that's not true. I haven't always. I used to do six sessions. That was my kind of thing. I don't know why it was six. One day somebody will tell me why it's the number six that we choose. But I used to do that kind of four sessions, six sessions, eight sessions. That was my block. Mm. And now I'm very much like, well, you come and work with me when and when you're ready for how long you want to work, and then we'll kind of negotiate that over time. It's, I always found it really interesting because there's something that the client really owns about that. And I'm not saying that to have six sessions is wrong, but I'm just really curious about the ownership that somebody has to kind of come back and forth working with you in that way.
And I think from experiences that I've had recently, I think if you're going to work in that way, I think it's really important that there are... it's being particularly mindful of the... not recontracting, but checking in.
Yeah.
And knowing when they're going to be. Because I think the mind, if it's maybe too broad or open-ended, I think the mind responds well to kind of knowing that there are... Oh, we're going to have a check-in. Oh, what did I want to get done by that? You know, that level.
Yeah.
Likes things to be tidy, or likes things... It might, you know, coalesce more around a certain piece of work if you know that there's some recontracting or... I'm just playing around with all of that because I very much like to give it to the client rather than, it's my package because my spreadsheet says I need to sell four packages, which is fine, and I get all of that as well, you know, and it's I just, you know, I'm just not organised enough to...
And it's a way of working, isn't it? Because there are different ways that people can work as a coach and different ways that you can... do your business, and it's like finding what's working for you, because if it works for you and you're happy with it and it's giving you the outcome that you need, then that's how you might want to work.
And different need for clients as well, and that's it. I'm very clear that, you know, the way that I'm talking about coaching, that there's a lot of people that won't be my client, and a lot of people will want the coach to actually take more of it. You know, and send me a summary at the end of each session, and you know, do a lot more of that accountability thing and checking in with me. They want... I like it to be over there, but there are clients who like it to be more over here. And so, it's good that there's that breadth within the coaching family.
Well, I think so. You know, it's that thing that allows, you know, for you to coach the way you want to work, because there are the clients that will want to work how you work, and so there's enough breadth for everybody to be happy, as it were. Well, Teresa, it's been absolutely fascinating talking with you today. If people want to find you, get hold of you, where might they look?
So for my private coaching, I'm on teresawilsoncoaching.com. And for my team and group coaching, I'm on hellothinkspace.com.
Awesome stuff. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Pleasure.